Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeed.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. Today is Sunday, August 5th, 2018, and this is show number 691. We've got a fun-filled, pretty geeky show today that I really enjoyed researching in order to be able to bring it to you. This week's chit-chat across the pond is an interview with good friend of the show and good friend of mine, Tom Merritt of the Daily Tech News Show. He's also co-host of Cord Killer, Sword and Laser, and Current Geek. Anyway, he joined us to talk about the importance of community to his podcasting experience. We explore how he created such a thriving and participative community, what it means to him, and what would podcasting be like if he didn't have a community. And we even talked about the downsides of having a community. It's probably one of my favorite discussions I've ever had with Tom, and I always love talking to Tom. I hope you'll give it a listen in your podcatcher of choice under Chit Chat Across the Pond or Chit Chat Across the Pond Lite, or you can always go listen over at podfeet.com. This week, I got to be on the awesome podcast Clockwise again with, I think this was my 14th time, with Dan Morin and Micah Sargent, along with John Maltz. We talked about our file organization strategies, or lack thereof. That would be the other people, not me. We talked about whether it was time to dive into 3D printing. We talked about tech accessories that impress us and our backup batteries. You're going to learn a lot about backup batteries in this podcast today. Anyway, we also talked about embarrassing podcast stories. You can find it in your podcatcher as episode number 252 entitled I'm Not Alone in My Monsterdom, or follow the link in the show notes to relay.fm. Our final public service announcement is I wanted to tell you that my video tutorial about the free vector design program for iPad and iPhone, Vectornator Pro, is now up over at Screencast Online. You might remember back in May, I did a blog post about Vectornator Pro, and I talked about it in the podcast telling you how incredibly cool it was. In any case, I posted the teaser video over on podfeet.com so you could see the intro to see if it's something you'd like. Remember, you can get a free trial of Screencast Online without giving a credit card and see the entire back catalog over at Screencast Online. I debated at length what to entitle this next article as I rewrote it four separate times. I considered at one point entitling it, How Many Engineers Does It Take to Understand a Battery? But I settled on, Can a Portable Battery Charge a Large Laptop? The article started as a review of a portable battery that I expected would fully charge my 15-inch MacBook Pro. When my early test didn't give me the results I expected, it was time to start diving deep into the basic electronics to try to understand why. There's a reason that in my first year of engineering, I chose to go mechanical rather than electrical. Mechanical engineering is so much more intuitive to me than electrical. For example, grab your left forearm with your right hand. Twist your right hand. That's torque. Got it? There, you understand. That's how mechanical engineering works. You can feel it. You can touch it. You know what it is. Anyway, that's why I'm not an electrical engineer. But through conversations with the manufacturer of the battery I was testing from Jackery, and doing independent research and talking to Steve and our buddy Ron, who is also an electrical engineer with a degree from Caltech, I think I can answer the question of how well a portable battery should be able to charge a large laptop. I've been under the assumption for quite some time that I understood portable batteries, and I understood how to figure out which ones would meet my on-the-go device charging needs. Turns out, I was mistaken. There was much more that I needed to know, and this lesson will include some equations, so, you know, buckle up. On small battery charges for small mobile devices, you'll usually see the MAH, or milliamp hour, rating spelled out quite prominently. The smaller lipstick-sized ones, like the Anker PowerCore Plus Mini, might show something around, say, 3,000 or 4,000 milliamp hours. These small battery chargers include one or more USB ports for charging your devices. And the ports will also have ratings on them. You'll see things like 5 volts paired with 1 amp, 2 amp, 2.4 amps, or even higher. Now the V is volts, A is for amps. Amps is a measure of electrical current. If you look at the charger block for your iPhone, it will say 5V1A. So a battery with that rating will work fine for your phone. That's 5 volts at 1 amp. But if you have, say, the smaller iPad, it might require 2.1 amps. The 12.9-inch iPad Pro requires 5 volts at 2.4 amps. Notice all of these values were at 5 volts. That's going to matter later in the story. As we launch up to the big batteries that claim to be able to charge laptops, you'll start to see additional specs quoted. You might see W for watts, which corresponds to the large power adapters we have for our laptops. You will also see WH, and the H is lowercase. That stands for watt hour. And that's where things get really interesting. Watt hour is going to be the measure that we will need to use to figure out if a battery has the capacity to charge our laptops. Now let's have some fun with definitions and equations. The equation that governs our topic is called Watt's Law, and it's extremely simple. So that's one of the reasons I thought this would be simple. Watt's Law says that the power in watts is equal to the voltage in volts times the current, which we measure in amps. Or just using the units, we can say watts equals volts times amps. Pretty simple, right? It's only got three variables. That's an easy equation. Current, in turn, which we measure in amps, is the number of electrons delivered over a period of time. So this is where it starts to get tricky. So let's say this another way. Current has a time component in the denominator. It's number of electrons over time. That means the power, since it's voltage times current, also has a time component in the denominator. Again, voltage times current, and current is electrons over time. In defining the capacity of a battery, it doesn't make sense to have time in the definition. If we're talking capacity, there shouldn't be time in it. It's like I'm selling you a bucket and I tell you it holds 3 gallons per hour. What does time have to do with the capacity of a bucket? Same thing with a battery. If we want to know the true capacity of a battery, we need to get time out of the equations. Out of the equation, I should say. If watts has time in the denominator, we need to multiply by time to get it out. So watts times time, watt hours, right? We said watt hours was going to be important. We now know that watt hours is the best way to measure the capacity of a battery independent of any voltage requirements. It's all out of there because the watt hours is going to tell us that capacity. Now, when I first started on this journey, I thought I'd be able to charge my MacBook Pro over the USB-A ports on these large capacity batteries as long as the battery's capacity was high enough. Turns out, charging a laptop over the USB-A ports is not actually feasible. Let's talk through this with an example. The MacBook Pro has an 87-watt power adapter, and the USB port works at 5 volts. So if watts is volts times amps, then we would need 87 watts divided by 5 volts, or 17 amps in order to charge the MacBook Pro. It turns out 17 amps is a lot of current. Remember, we talked about 1 amp, 2 amps, 2.4 amps. 17 amps would be required to charge a MacBook Pro with an 87-watt power adapter. That's too much current. It's more than a household extension cord can even handle. It would get really, really hot, and it would be incredibly inefficient because it was losing so much energy as heat. Now, some of the batteries out there offer what they call quick charge. Your device has to support quick charge to take advantage of it, but the math will still come to the same conclusions. One battery I tested said that the quick charge supported up to 9 to 12 volts, but its quick charge at that high voltage had the current down at 1.5 amps. So it's still not enough to support the MacBook Pro, so we know we can't charge a real laptop on a USB outlet. Now, the batteries you can now find claim to be able to charge our laptops, up to and including the big girl 15-inch Touch Bar MacBook Pro. They all have, all of these kind of batteries have AC or alternating current outlets in addition to their USB ports. In the US, these AC ports operate at 110 volts. Now, don't ask me why alternating current applies to voltage. I just don't want to go down that whole road. But an AC outlet is like the thing in the wall, you know, the power plug, you plug it into the wall. That's the kind of outlet we're talking about that comes on these newer batteries. With an AC port on a charger, that means you can plug in your power adapter that came with your laptop. Now, why would we want to do that? Batteries supply charge via their USB ports in DC or direct current. If they convert the lower DC voltage to a much higher AC voltage at 110 volts, that allows a much lower level of current to flow, just as our equation showed us, and it will still charge the computer. Remember, we need 87 watts on a 15-inch MacBook Pro. If watts is volts times amps, we'd only need 87 divided by 110 volts, or 0.79 amps, to charge that laptop. That's a nice small level of current, and it will not burn itself up or lose a lot of energy due to heat. When you plug in your power adapter, ironically, it will convert the voltage back to direct current. So we go from DC to AC back to DC. And now you know why AC/DC's first album, released in 1975 in Australia, was called High Voltage. I bet Dr. Dream already knew that. Now, we have the math and the terminology under our belts, which means we're dangerously close to being able to calculate whether a battery can charge our laptop. There's one more thing to discuss. When a battery has to convert from DC to AC, there's loss in the system. One battery manufacturer, Jackery, told me that the loss is around 20% due to the conversion and other protections for the battery itself. Sadly, we lose another 10% or so when our power adapter for our laptop converts it back to DC. I know, you're still wishing that USB port would work. You and me both. Now, I said there wasn't loss due to heat, but there probably is loss due to heat in this particular conversion we're talking about, but it's not because of the high amp problem. That's what I meant earlier. All right, to calculate how much of the battery's capacity you can actually use to charge your laptop, you have to take this loss into account. So we've got 20% loss going from DC to AC and 10% loss going from AC back to DC. Now, remember the capacity of the battery is given to us in watt hours. First, we lose the 20% due to DC to AC conversion, and then we lose the second 10% after we lose the 20% loss to the computer. So the equation becomes the capacity in watt hours times 80% times 90%, which is 72% of the capacity that they tell you. To figure out if or how much a given battery can charge up your laptop, you take 72% of the watt hour capacity rating of the battery and divide it by your laptop battery's capacity. I've been testing two high capacity batteries, one from Jackery and one from RAV Power, and you're going to hear about them later in the show. I use their specs on the two batteries, along with the tech specs for the current 12-inch MacBook Pro, 13-inch MacBook Pro, and the 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I put them into a handy table on the website. I calculated how many charges you should expect to get on these three different laptops on the two different batteries. I'm not going to go through all of the statistics on it because it's a lot of numbers going by, but basically one of them can easily do a 12-inch MacBook or 13-inch MacBook Pro, and the other one can do the 15-inch MacBook Pro and below. Again, we're going to hear about that in a few minutes. Now, I want to give you a couple of caveats. The numbers I calculated for you are theoretical. I can't promise you're going to get exactly these numbers, but it should set your expectations a little closer to reality. A heck of a lot better than if you just look at that milliamp hour number. If you're going to run the math for your own laptop, make sure you look up the exact model you have. For example, the newer 2018 MacBook Pro, the 15-inch, has a significantly larger watt-hour battery than the one I have, which is the 2016. It's kind of interesting that they changed the size of the battery in that length of time. All of the calculations here assume you're not using the laptop and draining its battery while charging from the battery. That's the third caveat. After all of this research and discussion, Steve and I still have a significant unanswered question. If the laptop's power adapter can provide enough power, that is some combination of current and voltage, through USB-C to fully charge the laptop even while it's in use, why can't the battery do the same thing through USB-C? The battery has sufficient capacity to charge the laptop, so there must be another factor, such as maximum current or voltage or both, that limits the battery's ability to charge the laptop over USB-C. If anyone knows the answer to that question, we would love to hear the answer. Now, after I wrote this up for the blog post, John Ormsby, also known as NASA Nut, wrote the following. With regards to your question to the audience, apparently the MacBook Pro 15-inch batteries are rated at 11.4 volts, and the two external battery charging devices that I referenced were both rated at 5 volts output. Therefore, assuming that the MacBook Pro does not have some sort of internal boost circuit that would take in 5 volts and boost it to over 11.4 volts, these 5-volt devices will not charge the battery through, I assume he's talking about through USB-C. If you will notice, the USB-C charger that comes with the MacBook Pro can actually produce three different optional outputs, 20.2 volts, 9 volts, 5.2 volts, and he's given different amperages at that. So the 20.2-volt output would be sufficient to charge the battery with the rate of charge determined by the current amps and any internal charge control circuitry. So even though the external battery chargers may have sufficient energy capacity, they are not at a sufficient voltage level to charge the MacBook Pro's battery. Well, that makes a certain amount of sense, but why not? Why did they make it like that? Why didn't they make it so that it could do it? If USB-C can hold it, why didn't they make it to do that? Let's take a break from talking about batteries. Don't worry, there's more to come, but it's a lot less nerdy, I promise. And let's have an aperitif. Today, for your pleasure, we have a recording from Nightwise of the Nightwise.com podcast. He decided to record his observations as he went to the Table of Sadness at the Apple Store in Brussels. In addition to his own thoughts, he also recorded his conversations with the folks at Apple about the dire state of his MacBook Pro with butterfly keys.
Hello. Ah, bonjour. I have an appointment to bring in my Apple MacBook at 5:30. Butterfly keys. The dust heart attack.
Okay. The name is?
Hendrix.
Hendrix.
H-E-N-D-R-I-K-S.
So no. It's to pick up?
No, it's to drop off.
To drop off. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Even better. Really cool to find you.
Okay, I'll give you the email that you guys sent
please,
me with the appointments.
Maybe
Apple Support, your planned appointment at the Genius Bar. There you go.
Okay, so no, it's an appointment.
Yep.
Okay. It's you?
That's me.
Yeah,
sorry, that's on the company name.
No, yep. It happened. That's why I just checked with your email address and I found it.
No problem.
No problem at all. It's always like this when you have the email, there
okay.
is no problem. Do you know your Apple ID and password? And
yes.
And the password of the computer?
Yes.
Yes, perfect. You speak English and Dutch?
English and Dutch, yeah.
Dutch, okay. And did you do a backup of everything?
Everything's time machine.
Perfect. You can come with me, please. I'm coming back.
Okay. I'll follow you along.
All right. You can sit at that table.
Yep.
And they will come to see you as soon as they are ready, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right. I sit at the table. And I wait for them to come to me. And I feel like I'm pregnant and I'm waiting for my test results. A lot of other people waiting here. So yeah, this is a fellow Nocella Castaways. Hi, by the way, this is Nightwise from the Nightwise.com podcast calling. Sitting inside the Apple Store in Brussels, talking to myself. Because I wanted to do a little sound-seeing tour. This is a very legendary Apple Store because it has been visited by Allison Sheridan and Steve. And some European Nocella Castaways a couple of weeks ago. It was, I think, nearly freezing out there back then. Now it's 32 degrees C. Oh, and it's not really cool here. So I have a 2017 MacBook Pro with the butterfly keys. And I have started to notice that the travel on these babies was going. And I already cleaned it out and say I've blown on the keys and everything, tried the whole shebang, tried to clean it, but I decided, you know, I'll contact Apple, see what they do. So they said, that's okay, bring it to the store. Now, for you guys who don't know, and for you spoiled Americans who have an Apple Store around every corner, we have one in the entire country. This is the only official Apple Store. I'm here with my MacBook, so I'm going to send it in because I hope that they are going to return it, fix it sooner, because we have a lot of resellers. Apple resellers, I actually have one across the street of where I work in Brussels at the moment, but these guys take, you know, longer. So I'm here with my Mac, waiting for them to come to me. I bet Allison has pictures, but I'll give you a description of the Apple Store. It's a gigantic store. I think it's about, I don't know, 40 meters deep. I think 20 meters across. Yeah, that should be it. It's about three stories high. One big open room filled with tables. And in the middle, they have trees. Yes, my friends, they have them in giant flower pots surrounded with benches that people sit on. And then there are a lot of tables. And on these tables, people sit and wait for the Macintosh geniuses to come along. So, yeah. Oh, man. How did I get here? Well, I actually cycled here. I actually took my little bike all the way up from La Gare du Nord, which is at the bottom of the city, to here, which is basically the highest point in the city. And it's 32 degrees outside, and it's hot. So we're going to see if I can hand in my my Mac and see how long it's going to take us to repair it and give you a little bit of the Belgian Apple Store experience. So we're waiting in line. I can tell you some interesting things, but there are not a lot of them. You know, you have all the Mac products here. There's a giant screen at the back. I'm talking about, I don't know, 8 meters wide, 4 meters high, which they use to display all the events that are going on. And how it works here, which to me is kind of new because, you know, I've never been to a real Apple Store before, at least not for a repair, is that you come in, you make an appointment, you come in, there's somebody waiting at the door. And this was a very nice lady that helped me. And it's always cool, the Apple Store, it's very diverse. This lady was in a wheelchair. That's cool. And as you know, she asked for my details, company name, found my appointment, and she parked me at this table where somebody is going to come and visit me. Pretty interesting to hear that as I was talking to her, you could probably hear a colleague come up and go like, okay, pas de rendezvous, which means no more appointments because it's pretty busy here. People come here to pick up their stuff, drop off their stuff, I don't know, get training, buy stuff. For me personally, I think it's a very chaotic experience. I am used to other levels of service in retail. Yeah, it's very American. That's what I can say. It's new to us. We kind of like the personal approach. We either like to get yelled at or ignored, or a personal approach. But this, please sit down, the doctor will see you soon, is new to us. So let's wait for the guy to come. And then I'll, you know, punch up the microphone again. In short, you're going to replace it with the 2017 keyboard.
Yes.
And the new keyboards are only going to come out after September.
Yeah, we don't
you don't know. No. And should I have a keyboard? Should I have an issue with this Mac again while it's still on the warranty? I can just come back.
Exactly.
Okay, that's good. The thing is, I'm starting to miss. I skip a character.
Okay.
And it's then, really annoying.
Yeah,
they're like, oh.
I understand.
So there's a bumper case around it normally.
Okay.
So when it's back, I'm going to get one of those keyboard protectors as well.
Yeah,
I've got
idea.
A screen cover.
Okay, that's a good idea. Seems good.
Kind of try to keep very good care of it.
We call it, it's a top case. So the top case is completely the touch bar, keyboard, trackpad, and battery.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, it's a drag if they're so small. So.
Yeah, exactly. Everything is in it. Meanwhile,
so yeah. You run the diagnostic, and that's going up through the net and coming back to your iPad.
Exactly.
So, that's cool.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm quickly going to check something.
Sure.
It's going to take like 5 minutes, and I'll be back with you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Quick summary there. They're going to replace my keyboard with the 2017 model. Because the 2018 model, you know, that's supposed to be improved, is not available yet. And they're going to replace my touch bar, my keyboard, my trackpad, and my battery just to swap out the keyboard with the same type of keyboard. So should I have the issue again, well, I can come back and they'll do it all over again, hopefully, with the new keyboard. Because that was one of the options that they gave me. You want us to wait 3 months and then, you know, come back and get the new type keyboard, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to swap this one in. Very friendly guy. Very cool how they run diagnostics. They boot it up in some kind of live mode, connect to a Wi-Fi network, and an automatic diagnostic program gets run. And they get the results of this program on their iPads as they're doing an inspection of the machine. So completely wireless. Pretty cool. So yeah, we're going to hand it over. And then I hope that I'll get it back within 5 to 10 working days. Keep you posted. You guys. Bye.
Well, hey, thanks for that, Nightwise. I did put a photo of you in the Brussels App Store when you took us there along with Helma and Peter. That was such a good time. But I gotta say, it's hard to imagine that place ever being warm. We were so cold that day. And you said it was 32 degrees, which that's really cold, right? I knew what you meant. Anyway, I had to laugh when you talked about how you only have one Apple Store in Belgium. Talk to Bart about it. There are zero in Ireland. I have no sympathy for you. As long as Bart doesn't have an Apple store, nobody gets sympathy. Well, it was interesting to hear the technician explain what gets replaced when they fix a keyboard problem these days. He said the keyboard, trackpad, battery, and touch bar. Now it makes sense why that replacement is $700 when it's out of warranty. I wanted to tell the audience about some fun I had processing the audio that I got from Knight Weiss's visit to the Table of Sadness. There was a lot of background noise from the crowd in the Apple store. The good news was that Knight Weiss did a pretty continuous recording for the most part, and there were long stretches that I was going to edit out anyway, but it had just the room noise. That was really good because I was able to import his audio into the free and open source audio editing program Audacity. Now, instead of any of my fancy pants paid for audio editing apps, Audacity is my go-to when it's time to remove noise. I did a tutorial on how to use Audacity to remove noise so long ago that the screenshots still have the Aqua interface, but I'm pretty sure this is my most viewed and definitely my most commented on tutorial on all of podfeet.com. I still get comments to this day about it. Anyway, I bring it up because it was so easy with this lengthy sample section of the noise to allow Audacity to learn that noise so that the audio came out really well. I hope it sounded good. I haven't heard it leveled yet. I know some of it was kind of quiet that I had, but hopefully it does work out well. I guess I'm promising this before I know how it's going to come out after being leveled by Auphonic. Anyway, you would have never believed he was in an Apple store after listening to what I heard, because at first I had to, the noise removal was so good, it sounded unnaturally quiet. So I was able to dial back the noise removal using Audacity in order to make it sound natural, but not have it be overwhelming. Now, Audacity can't solve all noise problems, so it's not magic, but when you have just the right kind of noise problem, it feels like magic. I'd like to try an experiment that I'm stealing from Adam Curry, one of the inventors of podcasting. Very early on in podcasting, on his Daily Source Code podcast, he did an advertising experiment. He asked the audience to look around them and try to take a mental picture of what they saw. Right when he said the name of the product he was advertising, he said, "Look at what you're looking at right now." He wanted to see if he could imprint that product on the audience's memory such that it was triggered every time they saw that same scene. Well, I'm purposely not telling you the name of the product because 3 times a week I run on the beach past a sign and I hear Adam saying that product name from almost a decade ago. So let's try that right here. Whether you're driving, you're at the gym, maybe you're doing laundry, maybe you're washing your car, or even if you're using the NoSilicast to go to sleep, I want you to look around you and memorize what you're seeing. If you're blind, maybe there's a smell or the softness of the chair you're in that you could think about. Everybody ready? Can you see it? Can you see it? Can you feel it? Podfeet.com/Patreon. Roll those words around in your head and think, gosh, I'd really like to support the Podfeet podcast by going to podfeet.com/Patreon. Now, every time you feel that softness of that chair or you see the treadmill over which you're sweating or fold that favorite shirt, I want you to think of supporting the podcast through Patreon. Let me know if this works, okay? Well, I know the live chat room was really hoping that I get back to getting super nerdy about batteries, but it gets way easier from now. Now that we understand how to size a battery to charge our laptops, I'd like to tell you about the two I've been testing. The first is the Jackery Power Bar, and it has a capacity of 77 watt hours. If you still care about milliamp hours, it's 20,800. And the second one is called the Rav Power Station, and it's got a terrible name, RPBB055. Anyway, we're going to call it the Rav Power. The Rav Power has a capacity of 99.5 watt hours, also known as 27,000 milliamp hours. Well, both batteries are designed to charge your smaller mobile devices via USB-A and USB-C, but also support the AC outlets for charging laptops. Both of these batteries have excellent specs, and I can highly recommend both of them, but they have different advantages and disadvantages. Both batteries cost $130 on Amazon, so I think this is a valuable comparison to look at the two of these together. These are not the only batteries out there for charging laptops, but they're the only two that I've tested personally. For brevity, I will be calling the batteries by their manufacturer's name only rather than their full product names. Let's start with the Jackery form factor. The Jackery was described by the Wirecutter as being the size of a pint glass. When it arrived, I photographed it next to a Ballast Point Black Marlin pint glass. They're right. It's just about the same size. The Jackery is 6 1/4 inches long with a rounded square cross-section of 2.5 inches. It's a nice gunmetal gray. On one end, it has the AC outlet and a light to indicate whether the 110-volt power delivery is enabled, because you have to turn that on these batteries, on both of them, actually. They made a design decision to put the power button on the opposite end to enable the AC port, which makes it a little clumsier than I would have liked to make sure you're delivering power. In general, I still depend on my Mac anyway to tell me with that happy little ding when it's being charged. On the other end, it has 2 USB-A ports. If you have a device that supports Quick Charge 3.0, one of the 2 USB-A ports will take care of you there, and the other will give you 5 volts at 2.4 amps, which I mentioned before is the requirement to charge a 12.9-inch iPad Pro or smaller. On the same end with the USB ports and the power switch, there's an LED which shows you the charge level of the battery. In my test, the battery level seemed to provide accurate information as I drained it. And this LED, by the way, this is actual numbers, so it shows 100 when it's fully charged. Now, the silk screening on the USB end of the Jackery could be improved. Even with the bright light, it's thin enough to be difficult to read. I relied on some photos I took under bright lighting conditions to be sure I could read the text. Luckily, on the AC outlet end, all of the specs are clearly printed. The Jackery charges with a USB-C wall adapter, which uses the input-output USB-C port I previously described. I tried charging it with my USB-C wall adapter from my MacBook Pro, and it did not charge the battery, which means you do have to keep track of Jackery's wall adapter. I like that it's very small and the cable was a reasonable length, which was nice, but I was curious why my big giant power adapter for my MacBook Pro didn't work. When I handed the Jackery to people at MacStock Expo, everyone said it wasn't as heavy as they expected. It's not light at 1.5 pounds, but since it has an internal fan for cooling when converting to AC power, it's much less dense than we are used to with traditional USB batteries. The RAV Power is similar in size to a thick paperback book. It's 5.5 by 7 by 1 1/4 inches thick. It has that lovely black sort of velvety coating that makes it feel nice in the hand. The corners are also rounded to make it feel a bit sleeker. But this 99.5-watt-hour battery weighs in at 1.87 pounds, so it's 25% heavier than the 77-watt-hour Jackery. If you have a larger laptop, you're going to need the RAV Power. But if you've got a smaller laptop and can get away with the Jackery, it might be a better choice based on weight alone. But let's not make a call based on just that. I just wanted you to keep it in the back of your mind while you're choosing a battery. On one of the long sides, you'll see the AC port, a power switch, 2 iSmart USB output ports, along with a 3-amp USB-C output port. The iSmart ports both work at 5 volts, 2.4 amps. RAV Power's iSmart branding is described on their site as intelligently detects the charging needs connected devices and automatically delivers the output needed for complete efficiency. Grammar set aside, that's good stuff, but it's different from Quick Charge on the Jackery. Like the Jackery, the RAV Power also includes an internal fan which kicks in quickly when charging your laptop via AC. The RAV Power doesn't charge over USB. It has one of the old-school power supplies with a power block partway along the power cable, and the cable pulls out so it's easy to store. It's probably the only thing I don't like about the RAV Power. The power supply is bigger and heavier than the Jackery USB-C charger block. However, the Jackery, though a smaller battery, takes 7 hours to charge through that USB-C charger. In contrast, the much larger capacity RAV Power takes 5.2 hours to charge. The reason the Jackery takes longer gets back to the things we learned in the lesson about electronics. And looking at the 2 power supplies, the Jackery USB-C charger says 100 to 240 volts at 0.45 amps, while the more traditional DC power supply for the RAV Power says 110 to 240 volts at 0.9 amps. Now, we know volts times amps is watts of power, so both adapters are getting the same voltage from the wall port. The RAV Power charger supplies power at exactly twice the rate of the Jackery, 0.9 amps versus 0.45 amps. So, you know, maybe I don't hate RAV Power's DC power supply quite as much as I did originally. Now, if charge speed is important to you, then the RAV Power charging 25% faster might be a factor in your decision. But if you plan on charging the battery overnight anyway, perhaps this isn't a critical decision point. I mentioned that the Jackery has an LED numerical readout on the charge level of the battery. The RAV Power has 8 LEDs to indicate charge level. In normal usage, having a precise value for the charge level isn't all that important, so the 8 LEDs is fine. However, in my testing, the number of LEDs that went down precipitously when I was using the battery long before the battery was actually running out. I'll get into the details of that when I get to the charging section of this article. I don't know if my LEDs are malfunctioning or whether this is normal behavior for the RAV Power. The RAV Power comes with a really nice hard shell case to carry the battery, the charger, and the two included micro USB cables. The battery and charger strap into place with a pocket for other accessories. But they also include a cushiony mesh bag made for carrying the battery alone in your bag. It's a nice touch, as I hate to see the lovely finish of this get marred banging around in my backpack. But you have to ask, how well do these batteries actually charge your laptop? In the post where we explored the math on how to determine if a battery could charge your laptop, I included that chart showing the predicted charge capability of the Jackery and RAV Power batteries versus the latest 2018 versions of the 12-inch MacBook, 13 and 15-inch MacBook Pros. Armed with this information, it was time to see whether the theory matched with real-life testing. My MacBook Pro and Steve's are 2016 models, and they both have slightly smaller capacity batteries than the newer models. This is why I said to look for your exact battery capacity before deciding which battery is right for you. The Jackery Power Bar, as you may recall, is a 77-watt-hour battery. So if we remove the inefficiencies, calculated by multiplying 77 watt-hours by 72%, it should be able to deliver 55.4 watt-hours of charge. My 2016 15-inch MacBook Pro has a 77-watt-hour battery, so the Jackery should be able to charge it to 55 divided by 77, or, coincidentally, 72%. I did a few tests while using the 15-inch MacBook Pro and charging at the same time. Remember, I said that shouldn't be able to charge it fully. And I did a few partial tests with the 15-inch asleep. And that Jackery just didn't have enough power, or capacity, I should say, to keep up with my 15-inch MacBook Pro. That's not a problem with the Jackery battery. It's just the wrong battery for my big girl MacBook Pro. Well, if it isn't good enough for my Mac, maybe we should take a look at Steve's MacBook Pro. It's a 13-inch MacBook Pro 2016 model with 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, and according to Apple's tech specs, has a battery capacity of 49-ish watt-hours. So if we've got a projected capacity of 55.4, 55.4 divided by 49.2 says 113%, in other words, more than a full charge of his Mac, and have 13% left over on the Jackery. I drained Steve's 13-inch MacBook Pro until it completely died, which it turns out is around 5%, and then I charged it with the Jackery starting at 100% while not using it. In 92 minutes, the MacBook Pro went from 5% to 100%, and in that time, the Jackery was left with a whopping 11% left. This extra 11% allowed me to charge a completely dead iPhone 8 Plus up to 90% before the Jackery asked for mercy and shut itself down. So the predicted was 113%. We had 11% left on the battery after a full charge. That's astonishing in my book. Even though this is not the right battery for me, I think it's a fantastic choice for someone with a 13-inch MacBook Pro. Now, let's take a look at the test on the RAV Power with my big girl 15-inch MacBook Pro. According to Apple's Knowledge Base article, the 2016 15-inch MacBook Pro has a 76-watt-hour battery. I ran two tests on the RAV Power, one charging the 15-inch MacBook Pro from near zero while I was using it, and one while the MacBook Pro was closed and asleep. The RAV Power absolutely met its promise. With this 99.5 watt-hour battery at 72% efficiency, it should be able to deliver around 72 watt-hours of charge. With my 76 watt-hour MacBook Pro, I should have been able to charge it to around a 95%. But the RAV Power outperformed my expectations. With the Mac asleep while charging, it went from 5% to 100% in 114 minutes. Again, remember the efficiency numbers are rough estimates and could easily vary between the Jackery and the RAV Power. I also tested charging my 15-inch MacBook Pro while charging from the RAV Power, which is probably how I would intend to use it while I was actually using it. I've been stuck on a plane with a dead Mac because plane outlets don't deliver enough power for the 15-inch MacBook Pro, and I'm often in conferences where my Mac runs out and I want to keep using it. In my test, the 15-inch MacBook Pro, while in use, charged from 2% up to 72% in 56 minutes before the RAV power was out of juice. I think that's really impressive considering I had my screen at full brightness with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth both enabled. Knowing I can get a three-quarter charge in less than an hour from fully dead while using my Mac, that's amazing. I recorded a few data points along the way with the help of my awesome housekeeper, Rocio, who checked in on my laptop while it was charging, because the only time I can leave my laptop alone is when I'm not there. I've included both sets of charging data on podfeet.com in the review, Mac Asleep and Awake, on the same graph. I did that because I discovered something really interesting. The rate of charge, the percentage gained on the Mac per minute, was nearly identical whether I was using the Mac or not. That meant that the RAV power actually stepped up the rate it was delivering to compensate for the fact that the Mac was draining faster by being used at the same time. I thought that was pretty interesting. Now, one more thing. I did check the TSA lithium-ion carry-on battery maximum size, and it turns out it's 100 watt-hours. So the RAV power at 99.5 watt-hours is obviously sized to just be legal for carry-on luggage. Now, I don't want to close out this review without talking about customer service. I only asked RavPower one question, and Kay came back with the answer. I asked Jackery, though, a ton of questions, and my new little friend Ian and I became pals along the way as a result. Much of the information in my article about figuring out what battery you need actually came from Ian at Jackery. He's the one who explained that the power conversion loses 20% and converting from the max power adapter loses the second 10%. He's the one who helped me with the initial understanding that you can't charge a MacBook Pro through the USB-C port. That discussion helped inform Steve and my path to the full understanding of why. Ian was awesome. He offered to let me return the Jackery power bar because it wasn't right for my use. But I decided their support was so awesome that I would give it away to our friend Pat Dengler, who has the 13-inch MacBook Pro. Steve did get full first rights of refusal, Kevin. Don't worry, but he didn't want it, so Pat's going to be able to take it. Like I said, RAV Power answered the only question I asked, so this is not any kind of criticism against them, just that Jackery was really put to the test. I did read in the RAV Power comments on Amazon that a few people had units that did not work properly at first, and they changed the reviews from 1 star to 4 or 5 stars because RAV Power saw their comment, got them new units quickly, and the replacements performed as expected. So RAV Power gets good marks in customer service as well. All right, let's bottom line it. If you've got a 13-inch MacBook Pro or smaller, and you can wait 7 hours for a full recharge of your external battery, the lightery Jackery power bar is probably the one for you to get. If you've got a bigger Mac or want to be able to charge many things many times, say while camping, the RAV power will meet those needs. I'm just happy that these solutions finally exist from two companies who are taking good care of their customers. If you've done rigorous real-world testing on batteries for laptops with AC charging from other manufacturers, I'd sure like to hear your results too. All right. Well, the live chat room says that their brains hurt from all the math I made them do. So we're going to wind it up for this week. Do not forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions. You can email me at allison@podfeet.com. Maybe you understand that USB-C current voltage thing and you can explain it to us. You can also follow me on Twitter @podfeet. Remember, everything good starts with podfeet.com. What was that comfy chair you were sitting in, that bicycle ride you were on? Where were you when you heard me say podfeet.com/Patreon? You can join our Facebook group, podfeet.com/Facebook, or a Google Plus group over at podfeet.com/Google+. Want to join the chat on Discord? podfeet.com/chat. If you want to use the Amazon affiliate links, what do you think it is? It's podfeet.com/Amazon. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights, 5 p.m. Pacific time, to join the friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.